and we are doing this. How are you doing, Robert?
I'm doing great. Thanks very much, Simon.
So who would I have the awesome pleasure to be speaking with?
Rob Lambie, I guess, from Scotland. I've been in the industry around about 31 years. I'm the owner of Fast Signs Scotland Limited. We are not part of the American franchise group. I'm probably better known for owning and running UKSignboards.com, which has been around now 20 years. I'm a RAP training and accreditation provider. I'm a graphics and RAP consultant to multiple global brands. And I'm president of ISA UK.
So, first off, love the accent. I guess I met you over in London.
Yeah.
Probably about 10 years ago. Was it that far back?
7 years ago, I think it was. I think you're right, 2013, 14.
Okay, and back when I met you, I remember thinking, oh, you are the guy behind UK Signs Board.
Yeah.
When I started out in the business, I had no knowledge, none whatsoever. I had some rap CDs from Justin that I managed to get over from the States, and I found your board as well.
Yeah.
And even though I wasn't doing that many signs, I found a lot of knowledge around vinyl in the board. So for me, you were a lifesaver back then. So thank you for that, first off.
Great. Brilliant.
So let's start with UK Signs Board, right?
Yeah, sure.
What is it?
It's about 20 years old, sort of the middle of this year, 2021. It started out as an idea, as a buying group. We were always predominantly a sign company, but we got heavily into sort of fleet vehicle graphics and so on. At the time, we had 6 or 7 different agents working for us around about Scotland, and basically in car garages selling vans and that type of things, and they would use us. Anyway, we had about 22 staff at the time. We were doing around maybe 40, 50 vans back then per week. It was all cut vinyl graphics, basically. So as you can imagine, we were using a huge amount of vinyl, more than most of the sign companies in the Central Belt. My part in the company was obviously installing the vinyl graphics, but I also spoke with all the reps, which vinyls we were going to buy, which was the next ones better for whatever reason. And I came up with, basically they were coming in, the sales reps were coming in and pretty much dropping their trousers for the sale, for the business, you know. And I started to think, no, like, I'm only just a small sign company in Scotland. What could I do if we could link up with other sign companies to create a buying group? And how could I do that, basically? That sort of got me thinking. At the time, this was around, 1995, I think this was. At the time, I used an American website called Letterville.com, sort of predominantly traditional sign writers and that type of thing. But they had a great sort of, basically like Facebook of today, and anybody within the industry was using Letterville, and I wanted something like that in the UK. The UK had absolutely nothing at the time. I also wanted to start a buying group. So what I did was, and it kind of, everything was based on a bit of a lie from my part, I guess the way to describe it is I was winging it, and I approached maybe a couple of dozen sign makers that I knew online from the UK. None of them was local to me. I asked them if I could source some of the best vinyls in the world at the cheapest price. Would they join a buying group? They all said yes, they agreed to it. So I then approached all the sign suppliers, all the vinyl suppliers in the industry in the UK, and said to them that I had, I think at the time was maybe 20 companies within my buying group, or UK Sign Group, which what it was called, would they give a discount as a group consortium? And the quick story is, yes, and at the time it was a company called Europoint who sold Oracle vinyls. They gave us the best deal and so on, and they threw in lots of extras, but basically we got, it was like £75, I think, back then, off the price of our first roll of vinyl. It was like a cast, whatever it was at the time. So I went back to the sign makers and said to them, right, your annual membership for joining my buying group is £75. When you purchase your first roll of vinyl, you get your £75 back. And that was pretty much how the sort of we enrolled members. I then, once the 20 plus sign makers paid their membership fees, I went back to the supplier and says, look, I want you to take an advert out now on my website for just basically for my time and efforts. They jumped at it. They offered me commission on everything that was purchased, which I declined. I said, it's not what I'm wanting to do. I don't want to be seen as a sales rep. I don't want anything like that. Just take the advert out on the site and I'm happy with that. And then I'm happy with the memberships. So that was how I came about sort of, I guess, launching the buying group. But we need somewhere that we could all meet, sort of congregate and so on. So we started a website called uksigngroup.com, and it quickly grew overnight, basically. We had people from all over the world, clearly, you know, as people like yourself were in Sweden and so on, but Australia, everywhere. They were sort of alienated because of the name UK Sign Group. They thought you had to be from the UK to be part of it. So after the first year, I changed it to uksignboards.com. And that's where the website came from. So you basically had all this traffic coming in from everywhere. As I say, it grew overnight, but it was never easy. But I think by 2005, we had around about 350, 400 different companies within the UK in the buying group. We sort of networked. You know, we helped each other. We spoke to each other daily on UK signboards. We subbed work out the way that you would do now. If I couldn't do a job in London, I would send vinyls to London and just pay the guys to do the installing and vice versa. So it worked out really well. Over and above that, everybody's benefiting from the buying group discounts. Now it just kept going. After sort of, I guess by about 2005, we added things like inks, tapes, die bond sheet, you know, everything that sign makers and that type of thing buy. So it sort of grew arms and legs overnight. You know, so it's been a journey and a half.
So what maybe needs to be said here, if I remember correctly, is that while you're doing UK signboards, you're also doing fast signs, right?
Yep, definitely.
So you're working full time on the company plus the board.
Yeah, so I work regularly from sort of 9 till about 7:30 at night, fast signs. I would go home, I would sit with my dinner at my computer and basically work until some nights I could work and continue to work in until I went to work the next day without any sleep. I made it a point, maybe after about 5-6 years, that cut-off point would be 3 o'clock in the morning. Until this day, my cut-off is 3 o'clock in the morning, but I've still seen me going to work the next day. I'm a bit of a night owl, if that's how to describe me.
I get that for sure. What would you say it's the most time-consuming part of it all?
I mean, to be honest with you,
the board.
Yeah, I mean, just sort of content updating, the sort of administration side of it. You know, any business, you're getting emails daily. So, you know, you could get maybe 20 to 50 emails in a day. With the website, because of the traffic that you're getting, you've continually got administration. You've got people, you know, that forget their password. They can't get in. Just silly things. Companies contacting you to supply your members, to take adverts out. So, yeah, I mean, you get people that love the idea of doing it, so they try and set up in competition. They log on to the site under bogus name. They upload viruses. It's just everything and anything. So it's got its pros and cons like any business. But that was, as I say, that was back in the day. It's all kind of changed, changing these days.
You seem to have like 4 different hats that I know of. It's Fast Signs, it's UK Signboard, it's the ISAA UK also group, and you're also as well a rep trainer and rep consultant.
Yes, yeah. Well, I mean, basically the training, if I go back, as I say, back in 1985 and so on, we had agents that were selling vehicle graphics for us, as I say, van garages and that type of thing. The biggest problem we had was the actual installers. Do you know, we'd all these vans and the volume, but looking back, our installers were crap. You know, there was mistakes getting made, running back and forth. We didn't have mobile phones, just everything sort of, I mean, we had a really good business model, but everything bottlenecked because of the installer. So I always wanted to sort of start, I love vinyl graphics. You know, everybody's got a sort of strong point. Mine was vinyl graphics. I loved working with it. The success of UK Signboards around about 2012, it was bringing in good money. So in 2011, I think it was, I launched basically the industry's first mobile app, which was SignUp at the time. So we had that, and in 2012, I started UK Sign Group training and accreditation. We wanted to work with all the vinyl suppliers, but we were independent. The money that I was making from UK Signboards, I purchased a second-hand Artec lorry. And I don't know if you were on it. Did you go into the truck at FESPA?
I think I saw pictures of it.
Yeah. Basically, it was an Artec lorry. It was the biggest we could legally get on the road.
It's a huge bus, right?
Yeah. I mean, basically, yeah, it's as big a lorry as you're going to get on the roads in Europe sort of thing. I bought a refrigerated unit on purpose. In the winter, it would be warm inside. In the summer, it would be cool inside. We could chill it, but we had to also regulate it. So we had rapid air extraction units in to suck the hot air out because we had six people using heat guns at the time. I spent a lot of money on it, the whole sort of setup. I spent a lot of money on it, a lot of time over a period of about 2 years converting it. We had it parked outside my sign business and we converted it every spare hour that we had. And yeah, so we did that. But the important side of it was that we also worked with a globally recognised education authority. That basically meant if I accredited someone, it was globally recognised in any country and still is. So cost us a lot of money to protect it and so on. So that came part and parcel with the truck.
So was that a necessity for you just to have a sort of a stamp or the people you were hiring for your own business? Or you thought, because you were doing this back in 2011, right?
Yeah, back 2012, yeah. Yep.
2012. So that is really relatively soon. That's when the industry is getting to adulthood, maybe. You could call it that. Maybe people are starting to know what a rap is,
yeah.
What you can expect.
I had to be taken seriously. Do you know, I didn't want to spend all this money on the truck and the courses and so on. Do you know, and it'd be worthless. If someone came on to our course, took the training, they had to be awarded a proper accreditation, not badge saying 3M or Avery or whatever, that you're in one vinyl and can only use one vinyl. This badge basically meant that you should be able to use any vinyl. And I'm not talking Airagress sort of bubble free type vinyl. We're just talking any vinyl. So that was and is the sort of unique selling point for it. As I say, invested a lot of money. We partnered up with a company called Paperlinks at the time to use their network because they had a European network. At the time, approached 3M, Avery, Oracle, and Arlon was going to be the fourth. 3M was the very first one to become interested in it. They basically jumped at it. Oracle and Avery really wanted to work with us on it. And then 3M basically said they wanted exclusivity or they didn't want to work with it. They didn't want to work alongside Avery or Oracle at the time. I told them no.
Really?
I just said, no, it's not on. Now, you cannot create an educational course that revolves around a brand, not for an industry. You can't create an educational course that revolves around a product or a company. The education authority looks on it as if you're trying to monopolize the industry from the root up. If you are the only awarding body that can hand out an accreditation on 3M or Avery Vinyl, then everybody from schools and colleges upwards, they're going to be trained on that product, and that can't happen. So that was the idea of it being independently accredited by the education authority rather than going through the vinyl manufacturers first, because Avery and Oracle, they didn't mind working with us through Paperlinks. It was just, unfortunately, that 3M spat their dummy and that was it.
That's so bad, yeah.
Yeah, so that's kind of how that worked. We toured the UK over a sort of 2 year period.
Why only the UK? Why not the rest of Europe?
It was basically piloted in the UK. Not a lot of people knew it, but I had good friends within the company Paperlinks, but there was a gentleman called Andrew Price who became the CEO by buying into Paperlinks. I quickly became friends with him, and he just basically told me what he thought of what I was doing and said, look, we could run this right across Europe and throughout the world. If it works, let's do what you want to do in the UK. And if it works, you know, we'll roll it into other countries. And they were big enough to do it. So that's exactly what I did. But we did the UK, we did Ireland. We only one time in Ireland, but it was really good. We did really well there.
That mean you will be rolling over Europe soon, or?
Yeah, well, basically, we were training in London the week before FESPA, and whilst we were training there, I received a call from the MD of Paperlinks asking, was Andrew Price in London, who was the SEO of Paperlinks? Quick answer was yes. Andrew Price appeared out of the blue, an Australian guy, and he said to me, Rob, where is my name up the side of the truck? And I said, look, you don't own the truck, the truck's mine, and we just partner with you, blah, blah, blah. He says, well, I have the board of directors coming over from Australia for FESPA next week. We're a buying consortium, we bought into this company, and no, this shit can't happen, and we need to be in the holds of FESPA. I was going anyway, you know, but we were training Paperlinks in London. I said to him, look, do me a favour, if you make this and sort this out with what I'm doing with my training in conjunction with your company, I'll pull you out of the hole and I'll make sure that this stand goes ahead next week. So at the time, I had an Avery Rapture called Mark Richardson. He was with us. He was doing the training with us. I said to Mark, look, we've got a full training course booked in for this week. Whilst you're doing that, I'm going to try and basically sort this show out. So I had 6 days in total to rewrap the truck in Paperlinks branding, wrap any car that I could find, chrome, order and design the entire stand for FESPA. I knew Michael Ryan, you know, from FESPA. I contacted Michael and said to him, look, can we get a stand big enough to take this truck? So Michael sorted that out from us. I designed, printed, got the graphics wrapped on the truck. Mark and myself, we were at maybe 1 o'clock in the morning wrapping the truck outside in the city centre of London. Wrapped, we hired a marquee tent and we put it up outside Paperlinks and basically wrapped one of the sales reps Audi's chrome to sit on the stand. Do you know, it was crazy. It was just absolute bedlam. I had 6 days to do it in, but come the opening of the show, the whole thing was, no, it all worked. It worked perfectly.
Nobody knew.
Yeah, no, it all came together. The sort of funny thing was that I got a phone call minutes before the board of directors and Andrew Price were set to arrive on the stand. And I had asked Caroline Shaw to help out on the truck at the time. I got Mark to work on the truck at the time. I flew one of my mates down from Scotland to help me. But everything was going, and I get this phone call and it says, okay, board of directors, we will be there in 30 seconds. I was standing in the back sort of platform of the truck, and I looked along one of the aisles and I could see this sort of entourage of these guys in suits coming towards us. So I opened the door of the truck and I shouted to Mark and Caroline, right, look, everything's going, it's live. And as I pushed the door, I pushed it too far and the door broke right off the hinges in the truck. It came right off in my hands. The wood split, the whole thing. And everybody just sort of looked at us and thought, shit. So you just don't think. So I actually lifted the door. I pulled the door. We had a cordless gun at the back of the truck behind one of the TVs. We run, got the gun, unscrewed the two screws that were sort of still holding the door up. And we opened the fire exit and threw the door out the fire exit. Well, Mark Richardson, I think, and Michael did that. as these guys were walking up the front steps, you know, and I just welcomed them. And it was, as I say, it was just sort of barefaced cheek bedlam, but it worked, you know, everything went great on the day.
What came out of you and Paperlinks? Because Paperlinks got bought, right?
There's a lot that sort of stemmed off the back of it. The actual FESPA, I made some great contacts at FESPA. A couple of companies from America came on the truck, met with them. They wanted me to go to the States and train in the States and basically create another truck to tour America, exactly the same as what I was doing in the UK. And we had companies like Toyota. They came onto the truck, wanted us to do training for them. They wanted us to tour. They've got 250 Toyota and Lexus garages. They wanted us to tour their garages and train at each location throughout the UK.
For wraps or what?
For wrapping, yeah, for wrapping. So they came on the truck and sort of shared that sort of views with us. General Motors, they came on as well. There was lots. We made some excellent contacts from that. So the most significant at the time was General Motors. For me, this was huge, having vehicle manufacturers come on. There was others. I don't like to mention them all, but...
So wait, we are talking back in 2012, or what are we talking about?
This was 2013. Yep. So they approached me, and they basically told me that they are all getting into wrapping. So, I mean, I can say these kind of things now. Back then, I couldn't say anything. I had to sign non-disclosure agreements and so on.
Wait, let me stop you right there, okay? So that's 2013, right? And they're all getting into rapping. They see the possibilities with all. We are in 2021 right now, and none of them are rapping. How come?
They all are.
They all are?
They all are, yeah. I still do consultancy for, I wouldn't name the names, but I still do consultancy for half a dozen. But they do it in a different way.
All right, they do sections, right? That's what you mean.
Yeah, no, I mean, basically, I'll tell you a bit about General Motors. And the reason why I can say that is because they made it public news. So I'll try and quickly tell you. Basically, General Motors sold in the UK one single van, the Vivaro van. They manufacture and sell 75,000 Vivaro vans per year from England alone. Throughout the UK, 70% of their vans go out with some form of vehicle graphics, and they wanted to bring this in-house. So they have fleets, you know, let's say Sky TV, BT, and that BT, British Telecom, that type of thing. And this goes for the majority of vehicle manufacturers, not all, but the majority of them. They go out and they manufacture their vehicles in-house to cover, let's say, the Vauxhall, Vivaro. I think in your country it would be Opel. So they do everything in-house and it's all covered by Opel. The only aspect of that vehicle that they cannot warrant is the vehicle graphics, because they do not do it in-house. So General Motors wanted to take my truck into their facilities and train their staff on site. They wanted to manufacture and do the whole thing in-house. And what they did was they asked me, could I help them with it? The obvious answer was yes. I worked on that project with them for 12 months. I was then asked to meet with them again in London. And they basically told us that they were told they must also consider two or three other vinyl manufacturers and their partners in on the project. They asked me, do I want to go up against them? Because I was just Rob Lambie. At the end of the day, it's just me. And I had to go up against the biggest vinyl manufacturers in the world who were partnering with some of the biggest fleet branding companies in Europe. And they said, do you want to come up against them? And the answer was yes. I said I would do it. They sort of laughed and said, if you think you can do it, then you've been working with us 12 months. We're going to give you a go and let you go for it. So I did that. I worked for maybe another 8 months on the project. I drafted in different companies that I worked with, one being HP. I drafted in Avery, who was also working with another company, again on this project, but separately. And basically 8 months later, General Motors called me, I think it was something like the 10th of December, and said, "Diz, we want to award you with the European contract to project manage this whole thing, that we have chosen you over every vinyl manufacturer and vehicle fleet branding company in Europe." So as you can imagine, I was ecstatic and, you know, to have done it on my own. So it was a big feather in my cap. So the first thing that they were going to do was they were going to announce it to the world. They wanted to do it at the Frankfurt Motor Show, at the commercial vehicle show in the UK. They designed one of the vans for the Frankfurt Motor Show and we applied all the graphics. They gave us a free rein on the one for the UK one, which was a chrome red Vivaro. Got Mike Swackey. You've interviewed Mike. I don't know if I'm pronouncing his name properly, but Mike came down and spent 3 days with me at General Motors, and we wrapped the chrome red Vivaro for General Motors for launching this worldwide. So this was 2015 by now. So from Vespa, we were now out of 2015. And I remember this part, I was running short of chrome red. I contacted Avery. They couldn't send it to me in time direct. I contacted Paperlinks 12 o'clock in the day. And it was April the 1st, which is April Fool's Day. I called them and the friend from Paperlinks, I said, "Look, I desperately need another 10 metres of chrome red vinyl. Can you send it?" And he says, "Rob, I don't know how to tell you this." He says, "But I'm sitting here at my desk with a pile of car keys and a pile of mobile phones on my desk." And he says, "Basically, Paperlinks has went into administration, and due to a collapse in the stock markets and something to do with a bank in Belgium, and basically the European division had gone bust." Because it was April Fool's Day, I couldn't take him seriously. There I am standing in General Motors wrapping this vehicle, and he's telling me the entire thing had sort of fell in its face. So eventually I had to put the phone down. I had to get on with it. I still thought it was a joke. And then General Motors, one of the guys who had became friends with from General Motors, one of the head guys, he walked up to us and said, "When were you going to tell me about this?" And he shows me a piece of paper, and it was from their finance department showing me that Paperlinks had gone bust, right enough. So I was gobsmacked, absolutely, with the carpet gets pulled from you. But all that aside, we still carried on with it. It did not stop us. We basically sidestepped Paperlinks. Avery were going to supply the vinyls direct, and kind of roll it out that way. So we carried on. Several thousand vehicles were done for in cut vinyl graphics. There was maybe 500 for, I can't remember the companies now, but there were several thousand vehicles done. But Renault then announced that it was going to take over this division of General Motors. It was announced on TV over the internet, and it started to taper off. Not for me, I still do work for them, you know, in consultancy, but the actual project, it just sort of tapered off. But they still do that volume of vehicles, you know, the 50,000 odd vehicles per year, vehicle graphics, and as does Toyota, as does Mercedes and various others like them. But yes, I am actually still in contact. I still do work for various different global companies, purposely not naming the names just now, but yeah.
That brings me back to a thought. In one of the chats I've had through the years, I talked to Tadashi from Japan, and he had an idea that in the future, car manufacturers will just deliver cars either black or white. I think it's like that, he said.
Yes.
And the color you order it in will be wrapped.
Yep.
So that sounded like a possibility to me back then. The more I speak with you now, the more I realize that that's probably not far away.
That's exactly Toyota. That's what they were speaking to me about in 2013. Toyota, basically what their vision was, that if you walked into a Toyota garage, you could walk out with any color. If you went in with your daughter and she wanted a new car, but she liked horses. She could have her own horse's head printed and wrapped on the roof and drive out with any colour of car, anything. If they just wanted it in white, if they wanted it in bubblegum, pink, whatever, then that's what you got. You could walk out of there with anything on your car. Now, that was back in 2013 they spoke to me. They already had that in the pipeline from years before. So it gives you a good idea. We're what, 10 years later?
Yeah.
How far do you think that they've developed since then? The wrap industry's got absolutely no idea what the motor industry's doing and are capable of. I couldn't get my head round about General Motors at the beginning. I said, look, this isn't possible. They took me around what they call a carousel. And the carousel is basically vehicles, it's vans hanging from what look like giant coat hangers. The vehicles are about 2 foot apart, and there's literally hundreds of them on this carousel. And the carousel is continually moving. It never stops. And they took me to the end of the carousel, and they told me to stand and look, and they had a scoreboard sort of type thing above the end of the carousel. And it counted up in seconds, up to maybe 120. And they says, like, watch this. It went up, and it got to maybe 120. A whistle blew, the van rolled off, and it rolled down a hill and onto the back of a low-loading lorry. They said, watch again. This time it maybe be 90 seconds, the next one maybe be 60 seconds, and so on. I says, look, I don't know what I'm watching here. What's the objective here? And he says, it's to show you that every 120 seconds maximum, we put another vehicle on the road. We cannot delay anything, the whole process. But those low loaders, what happens is the van goes on to the back of those low loaders and travels to a vehicle wrapping company. We don't see the vans for weeks. They then come back and they have to get tested, stamped for approval, and then they go out wherever they're going in Europe. And he says, we want to bring this in-house. I says, you're not going to wrap a van in 2 minutes. it's impossible. It's not going to happen. So it took me maybe 2 or 3 weeks before I could get my head around it. But ultimately, the way that they do it is they have different spots within this carousel, and they showed me it working, and they put an engine within that van within 2 minutes. They put all the seats in that van within 2 minutes as it's going along in the carousel. So what they do is the van comes along to stop one, and two guys walk forward and wrap the wings of the van. It then moves along. The next two guys wrap each door of the van. It moves along. Then the next two guys wrap, and this is just both sides of the van. They would wrap maybe the side doors of the van. It moves forward. It's hard to get your head round, because now you're still thinking this, it's never getting done in 2 minutes. And I still don't believe it would have just been 2 minutes, but their objective was the wrapping would happen right at the very end of this whole carousel process. If you ask someone to wrap a door of a van, if you ask them to wrap it 50 times or 100 times a day, how quickly do you think that they would be doing it?
Oh, no question about it. Yeah,
they've got no wing mirrors. There's nothing to take off. There's no door handles. There's no indicators. There's nothing. They just slap the vinyl on. They squeegee it down. They do what they're doing. Blah blah blah. And I know that's sort of ringing alarm bells for everybody. Every rapper probably listened to this. But if you're doing hundreds of these in a day, he says basically you perfect it. It's the same thing you're doing hundreds of times. It's not this. It's not the entire van. The guy that's wrapping is doing one panel, and he's doing it just time after time after time, and they get quicker. And he says as they go along, they find new ways of speeding it up even better and better and better. They do that with every aspect of the vehicle. If they can put an engine in the van within 2 minutes, I would say they could never do that, but they do it. Every aspect. So, as I say, when you see how these companies work on a global scale, and then how far down and sort of how out of touch we are with how this all works, it's really is an eye-opener. Basically, what General Motors wanted at the time was accredited fitters. They knew they were not going to get fitters straight away. They wanted to tap into a network. Toyota knew they were not going to get all their guys trained up straight away, but whilst they did, they wanted an accredited network. And the problem with the networks just now, and I'm only using the names because of everybody knows the 3Ms, the Averys, the Arlons, the, you know, Oracles, just, you know, all the big names. The problems with them is they hand out accreditations like sweets. They're not properly accredited. There's nobody really held accountable for fails, because even although you may have an accreditation, it still lies on the shoulders of your company as an independent. Whereas with UK Sign Group, what our objective was is to oversee the entire network, make companies accountable for fails, but equally, by being in that network, award them with work, such as, you know, General Motors, Toyota, Mercedes, whoever it may be that needs a network. And that's what the vinyl manufacturers need to do. You know, they need to take care of their network, get them in the door with these global vehicle manufacturers, give them the work, reward them with the work for their, you know, their commitment to their brand, for their commitment to being accredited, you know, in various different things. You will have your favourite brands of vinyl. You invest heavily in them. You want your guys to all tick all the boxes for that brand. Do you know, and you do everything to get that sort of warranty that you expect from your supplier / manufacturer. So in turn, those manufacturers should be rewarding us guys to, you know, by getting us in the door with these huge global companies such as General Motors. And it's a gripe I've always had. No, they do what they do. But my belief is the only reason there is these vehicle wrapping networks is more about protecting their claims, warranty claims, basically. So Rob Lambie, you don't have, let's say, a 3M accreditation, or you don't have Avery accreditation, so we're not going to take your warranty claim serious. Do you know, it's to protect them against claims. That's my personal view. No, I'm not saying that's what it is, but that's my view. These networks are more about that than actually getting the wrapper the work that they should be rewarded with for their commitment to the brand.
Listen, it sounds beautiful that if you are part of a network and you do your end of it all and you keep up what's accorded, that you get accredited with more work. That sounds beautiful. And if you, for whatever reason, don't meet the criteria, then you get told you don't meet the criteria and you have a chance to improve, or you don't improve, or you get kicked out of the network.
Yeah, exactly. No, it's sort of three strikes and you're out sort of type system. It's messy from country to country. There's some countries they give it out for nothing. It's frustrating. And it's maybe just my personal view, which is what I'm giving just now, but I don't believe it is. I believe that any rapper out there that is, you know, worth their weight, they can see it as well. Do you know, so if everybody that you just said it yourself, do you know, you get into the industry, you wanted to do things right, you're searching the internet, you want to improve, you want to continually improve, even although you may be getting the work and you may be able to rap, you're always looking for ways of perfecting your business, streamline your business and so on. But unfortunately, there's a lot of people out there and they are buying vinyls just because they're easy to fit. They think that they're a rapper and they're not. Me personally, I'm prepared to tell someone, look, mate, you're shit. You're not getting an accreditation, or you're excellent. We will award you with accreditation and I will bend over backwards to make sure that you get work for, you know, your commitment to my brand. You can't, it's got to be a two-way street, and the vinyl manufacturers, they don't do that. Not all of them. No, there's some of them out there, don't get me wrong, that they do work well with the rappers in the industry, but equally, no, there's a lot of them. They're very flippant. And if you're not a big name in the industry, then you're just neglected, if that's the way to describe it. Just neglected as a company, which is wrong. Every day we have a fail, but we're not getting taken serious. But equally, there's a fine line. You know, you've got the guys that can't rap and they try and get warranty claims. And again, that's not on, because they can't hold the internet and to badmouth someone.
I get that. As a rap shop owner and being part of the industry for a couple of years, I know that if you have a claim the first thing they go to is probably it's the applicator's fault. So they always start there and they start asking questions and maybe you get heard and maybe they take you for serious and then they might ask you to send in a sample and whatever it is. But yeah, that's the first default answer. It's an applicator's fault, I guess.
I mean, I'll give you an instance. We know that 3M is an excellent company, right? We know that they've got excellent vinyls. They acquired Knifeless Tape, another excellent product. And so on. No, they've just got an endless sort of line of excellent products. But if you get a feel with a 3M vinyl and it's a big project, they come out, they'll do a visit if the feel is being taken seriously. They've got a device that they put on the vinyl. I haven't a clue the name of it. I can't remember. They have a device that they put on the back of the vinyl. And that device will tell you every alien body that is on that adhesive. So if a recess pops out and you put a warranty claim in for it, they will come over and they will strip the, they will pull the vinyl back off and they will test an area next to where the fails happened, but not the actual failed area. So it's a fresh piece of vinyl. They pull it back, they put the device on, and it tells them every alien body that's on that adhesive. That will tell you if there is skin residue on the adhesive. It will tell you if the person's a smoker. It will tell you if the person had a kebab for their lunch that day. You know, it tells them everything that is on the back. It can tell them what you cleaned that vehicle with when you were prepping those recesses. And, you know, they've obviously got some sort of system and a tick box that there's a sort of tolerance allowed. If you've got pizza juice or whatever at the back, you know, you're not going to get your warranty claim. And it's clearly to protect themselves, and I fully understand that and appreciate that. But as we sort of progress, vinyl manufacturers, they have started rebranding and promoting their own cleaning fluids, rebranding and bringing all sorts in, and you must follow our guidelines, you must use our cleaning fluid, you must do this and you must do that, right? So here's one to sort of put a question out there, just throw it out there, right? So 3M acquired Knifeless Tape. As I say, Knifeless Tape, another an amazing product. And when you'll know yourself, I think any rapper will have experienced this, when you remove Knifeless Tape, you sometimes get the sort of adhesive residue left behind from Knifeless Tape. It can be trapped underneath the vinyl. Am I correct? You know, you have seen it. If you look at an angle, you can see and you just sort of think, shit, I've got a bit of adhesive residue in there. Because when you're pulling out the Knifeless Tape at a sort of an angle, sometimes you can go wrong and you leave a bit of adhesive residue. So you apply the vinyl down, later on you get a fail because the leading edge of your vinyl has now got low tack adhesive underneath it. How can 3M warrant that, not warrant that claim or warrant a claim, whatever way you want to put it? Do you know, because what you're doing there is you're using one of their products to leave an alien body beneath the vinyl, which would lead to a fail. Not that they probably are aware of it, but it's just, as I say, it happens. Wrap-cut tape is not the greatest for the wrapping industry, but it doesn't leave the residue beneath it. The filament is down one edge of the tape. It's not, a lot of people don't like it. I'll use it sort of 50-50. There's a sort of positive of that tape. It doesn't leave the residue below the vinyl.
I wanted to also ask you something in regards to the future, seeing that you have so much insight. You seem to speak a lot with suppliers also as well and manufacturers all over the world. So I gather you have a better insight in where the future of the industry is going. So if you can share anything in regards to that point, I would be welcome.
Where I would, an area that I would like to see it going, where I think it may go, I mean, you've got the sort of these global brands, you know, as you say, coming out of factories already wrapped, coming out of factories with all the graphics on them. An area that, trying to remember her name, Christina
McKay.
Christina, McKay, yeah. So she does some interesting work. I kind of noticed it because it's an area that is relatively untouched. It's basically a wrap fashion.
Yeah, I've seen it, yeah.
Yeah, she's sort of touched. No, she's using clothing and incorporating it into a fashion accessory. And if cars could be made into a sort of fashion accessory, and I'm talking like a, you know, you're going out for the night, a wedding or an event, a film premiere, whatever it is. Do you know that your vehicle, you get out the car wearing leather and denim, if that's how you describe it, and the car's actually wrapped in the same sort of thing. Do you know, it's more like a skin. I don't mean it's kept on maybe for a couple of days or whatever. I don't know how you would do it, but as I say, it's just, I've seen stuff that she done, and I thought, you know, it's a great idea for short-term wraps, not stripping the car down, not removing everything, just a skin, incorporating into sort of everyday life. I don't know. I mean, that I just see things going more personalised. Do you know, if you think about what Toyota was talking about doing, 2013, you walk in and you can walk out with anything on your vehicle. Do you know, I think that's a trick that us as rappers is missing. Do you know, I don't see how we can't do it. You've got to have that market, I guess.
That touches on the private side of it all with custom cars and all of that. What about the paint side of it?
I mean, I'm not so sure. The problem that I see with the paint side of it is everybody wants a wrap done for nothing. And they come in, they generally think that get your car wrapped instead of painting it because it's cheaper. A guy that's done it magnificent in the industry is Yanamize. He does brilliant. He sells a great deal.
But that's an experience, right? He sells an experience. That's not the rapid part of that.
But yeah, is the problem that I see with? I mean, I would love to do what he's. I'd love to probably have his money. He looks like he's doing incredibly well, incredibly famous, and everything. And you know, hats off to the guy. He's doing excellent. The problem I see with it though is that it's probably the producers of his shows, but everything is push, rushed out the door. Everything's done within hours, overnight, and so on and so on. And some of the quotes that sort of getting thrown about, I think actually damages the industry. And it's not because he's doing it intentionally. As I say, it's probably the way that the show's sort of promoted to create a sort of excitement within it. But I've actually had customers and heard other people saying that now the customer comes in and asks for a price, and they say, well, we've seen Yanni on the TV doing it overnight or doing it in 6 hours, wrapping a car in 6 hours. Why can't you do it? Do you know what I mean? And you're like, it doesn't work like that. In real life, it just doesn't work. Do you know, it's crap. But I think, and I always have done, is that we have to up our game and maintain it. Price of vinyls, I've seen some vinyls just in the past couple of weeks going up by 20-25%, whether it's COVID or Brexit or whatever. But the vinyls are creeping up in price. Inks are creeping up in price. Our manufacturing costs on the whole are creeping up in price. But the wrappers seem to be dropping their price drastically every end. And what's going to happen is the margin is getting tighter and tighter and tighter. So the only thing that you can do at this point is wrap based on quality. Do you know, keep your prices high and promote what you do because you're the best at doing it, at least in your area, and give them sort of quality over quantity. I know lease companies, car rental companies, they now have in their disclaimers when you lease a car that you will not wrap them. They will not allow you to wrap them. And the reason for that is because when the cars are returned, yeah, they're damaged. There's damage to the paintwork, there's scalpel marks, there's adhesive residue left behind because they're maybe using a sign vinyl, cast, cut vinyl, CAD cam, cast vinyl sort of thing with a permanent adhesive rather than using one with a removable adhesive. So you've got this car left. They can't do anything bar saturate it in chemicals to try and get the adhesive off and so on. When actual fact, if the wrap is sold properly and wrapped properly, the residual value should be increased for the car lease company because when they remove the wrap, it should come away effortlessly. There should be no scalpel marks. There should be no adhesive. The paintwork should be in a top quality sort of condition. So the residual value for the lease company should increase. But instead of that, it's devaluing. As I say, this all boils back down to the quality of the rappers in the industry. They are few and far between. And the problem that I see is that they're all being handed out these accreditations when they shouldn't be. They should earn the accreditation, not just turn up and be given it. But unfortunately, that's what's happening.
See, I get where you're going there, but at the same part, that leaves with an opening as well. Because if you are good, you keep your quality, you keep your price, it makes me think that in the end, you will prevail. You will not probably be Yanni Mice or not Yanni Mice, but be one of those.
You're dead right. It's the positive within the negative. You found it. And that is all you can do. Do you know, it's sort of raise the bar. You will eventually, do you know, attract the customers because they will get fed up. And, you know, the guys that are doing it for beer money, they're few and far between. They'll dissolve and disappear. But unfortunately, just now, with COVID and everything, it's survival of the fittest for us all.
I can completely understand that. So it was really interesting talking to you and getting your insight. You have such a broad insight into the rapping industry. I got to say, thank you very much for taking your time and being a part of it.
No problem at all, anytime.
I hope we can do this soon again.
Yeah, no problem. Do that, mate.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.